as an entrepreneur, what am I doing to start co-creating a new reality where employees can have better mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical health? And if I'm only in it for the money or the productivity or the efficiency, and I'm trying to control everything or put procedures and things in place or manipulate people and doing things, we're never going to have that reality.
Welcome to episode number 14 of the Connected Movement Podcast. I'm your host, Stu Murray. Are you disillusioned with our old, outdated systems and stories? Are you tired of the growing polarization in society? So am I. My aim is to engage in and unpack conversations with people from all walks of life as a means of co-creating a way forward for humanity. Today's guest is Fabien Doiron. Fabien is a serial entrepreneur. He loves getting involved in new business plans, ventures, and volunteering for meaningful causes. He is the founder of a highly successful heating, cooling, and refrigeration company called PhD EcoAir. In 2018, he was awarded Entrepreneur of the Year by the Beaubassin Chamber of Commerce and was recognized as one of 40 finalists for Moncton's Top 20 Under 40 Awards in 2022. Fabien is also leveraging his expertise in entrepreneurship and his passion for service as a new path as a business and a life coach. He uses a variety of personal healing modalities as well as powerful leadership strategies to offer support and guidance for people to find their own inner wisdom to heal and evolve into the best version of themselves. I really hope you enjoy this episode. And before we dive in, a thank you to our sponsor, Karen Phytoplankton. Many daily discomforts are the result of malnourishment. And you may be malnourished if you crash in the afternoon, you have digestive issues, you get lots of headaches, have trouble sleeping, you have muscle or joint pain, have trouble concentrating, and so on. The good news is the right supplementation can help with this. I've personally benefited from using Karen Phytoplankton, which has helped me find more energy in the afternoons and beat that crash. You can find Karen Phytoplankton products at Costco locations or online at thekarenproject.ca. Without further ado, let's dive in.
Fabien, thanks for joining me on the show today. And as we get started, I'm curious, you've been in the entrepreneurship world, you've been developing your own business and really scaling things up. And what led you into that world and into the business for you in the first place?
What led me in business? Well, I'm just going to answer that simply and say my dad and my family.
No way.
Because most of my family, actually uncles, my father, have been business owners for the majority of their lives. And I was kind of guided in some ways into business in 2012, which led me down the path that I am today of being an entrepreneur, learning to be more of an entrepreneur and not a businessman, a busyness man all the time anymore, in my busy self all the time. So that's kind of where it started. And it went from there.
That's interesting. And When you say being more of an entrepreneur rather than a business man, like what does an entrepreneur mean to you?
So entrepreneur, for myself, usually as a coach, I would redirect that question to you, but I won't do that today. For myself, it just means more being able to work on the business than in the business. And that's been something that's been difficult to learn along the years. And I really started diving into that mentality in early 2018 when I started doing a lot of my inner work and all that fun stuff to develop personally on a personal level and on a professional level. Being a business owner, from my perspective, is more just being involved in a business or just owning a business and being more involved in the daily operations of things. So the entrepreneur is more the visionary part of myself
and the business owner is more of the in the weeds, in the operations. I was a technician by trade, refrigeration mechanic technician. So I was really on the field, boots on the ground. And I had to learn to not wear too many hats. So not be the technician and still be managing everything, the company, the employees, and also being the visionary that's trying to grow the company and strategically shape the organization that we've built today with 30 plus employees.
Wow. So what I'm hearing is early on in your business, you were trying to be all the things all the time and leading to this feeling of perhaps scattered mind, scattered attention. Was it 10 years ago that you started your business?
So scattered self, scattered mind, absolutely. And it was about 10 years ago. Late 2012. So we're going on 10 years this coming December.
Congratulations.
Yep.
And when you started to go in, I remember you talking to me and you were saying you were working in sometimes 80 to 100 hours per week. What was that like?
Tiring. I think that's the simple answer. Remembering myself being pretty tired all the time and not noticing that within myself, just kind of pushing through all the time and being okay with that, being comfortable with that and being used to that, not really feeling myself being tired because I wasn't as, I would say, self-aware back then of my tiredness, physical feelings or things that were happening on physical level, I guess. So.
And then you said you started to lean into this healing journey back in 2018. Was there things that started to shift for you? Like what brought you to decide that you wanted to lean into a healing journey?
So what made me decide that I wanted to move into a healing journey or find a new path for myself? That's a good question. Probably a long answer too if I really dive into it, but the simple answer would be that I, like a lot of business owners, like a lot of entrepreneurs, I had a lot of external issues within my business. And that can be anything from employees that are sometimes difficult to deal with or situations with employees, jobs, customers, processes that we had that we were building as the company expanded, and all that fun stuff. So I went and found myself a business coach and started doing work on a business level. Okay, let's look at the finances. Let's look at what the employees are, what the org charts are, what that looks like. And then we started doing work around me and myself. And then I soon started to realize that I had a lot of personal work that I had to do because my personal behaviors, my personal beliefs, the way I deal with my frustrations, all those little things make the most difference in the daily operations and how things work. And not saying that external employees and external things don't matter, but my inner work, I started noticing my inner work being the most important thing that I had to work on if I wanted to get off my roller coaster, so to say. Because I really felt like I was on a roller coaster, just going up and down. There were good days, and then all of a sudden you had something happen, and or I had something that happened, and it just brought me back down the hill, and we just had to go back up. So it's it's been a journey, and that start to doing my inner work, I would say, was the seed to myself finding passion in becoming a healing practitioner, a personal coach myself to start helping others, and which I've only really embraced probably within the last couple of years. So wow. That's where it started.
Wow.
And then I think a better question for that was, or would be maybe, who am I? Who was I then? Who am I now? Kind of thing. Because I know I've always been someone that was very involved in the world. And so Fabien, the business owner, was very involved all the time in the world. And then I started finding myself on more of a spiritual level. And I started learning that I'm spirit, and on a spiritual level, that I didn't need to do as many things, that I could do things in a different way with the work I've been doing on a personal and spiritual level. It brought me to where I am today, where I'm able to not have as high expectations on myself or not put as much on my plate and things like that.
That's awesome, man. I think it's really interesting that some business coaching where you were focused on this externalized, very, you know, what do I have to do in the business? What tweaks, what changes, you know, what management practices need to change, and ultimately how that pivoted and started to shift. Okay, well, what do I need to change in myself? And what shifts need to take place in my own, how I'm showing up for myself and with my employees that will lead to some high impact changes? And I'm wondering what kind of changes that you noticed as you started to do that inner work and as you started to lean in back in 2018, what were some of the initial changes that you started to observe when you started to lean in and do that deeper personal work? What happened in your business?
Changes I started seeing were, for me, for myself, was me not being on a roller coaster as much. So being able to, well, one, manage my emotions, manage my frustrations. So I was able to react differently to the external circumstances. So that on its own created obviously a better culture, better group dynamics, better relationships with employees or customers, for a matter of fact. So I've seen more stability along the years as I've done that work. And as I've helped others within the organization start doing that work themselves a little bit as well, I've seen drastic improvements in, I would just say, culture, people being at ease a lot more. I've seen even drastic mental health improvements with a lot of our employees on certain levels. And I would say we all know there's always work to be done. There's still a lot of work to be done in our organization, but I have seen a lot of great changes created by me doing my own inner work.
Mm. It's always interesting how we want to affect change in the outside world and think it's a matter of exerting a force or putting on conditions on a certain thing to affect that change. But, you know, the more I lean into that inner work as well, I've really noticed that a lot of the times it's not requiring a force or a mandate or any coercing anybody to do any certain thing. But the more that we shift into that deeper understanding ourselves, and the more that we can embody, you know, as cliche as it is, it's true, embody that change that we want to see, it's amazing how the culture and organizations around us can really start to shift.
Absolutely. When I embody the change and I lead by example, the culture shifts. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
And you caught something else that you spoke straight to my heart. And it's like one of the biggest challenges that I face is you mentioned about being very involved and always, you know, doing, and, you know, where my mind goes there and what I, you know, do to a fault is tie a lot of my self-worth to my productivity and how much I can provide, and measuring these things to these external expectations. And I've been used to being that giver, that provider, that doer who, you know, on one side can accomplish a lot of these things. And somebody might look at that and be like, wow, you know, you've got all of these accomplishments and all these things. You must be so proud. And then inside it's like, well, I actually feel quite empty. And I don't feel this deep sense of peace within. And so, you know, that triggered some of those personal reflections in me. And you mentioned that you started to realize you didn't need to do so much and that you could have less expectations on yourself. Would you be interested in sharing what that felt like for you as you started to lessen the expectations on yourself and how you started to be able to let go of needing to do so much?
Well, that's still an ongoing progress. That's still something I would say I am working on. And how it felt like when I first started. I know I felt resistant to being able to do that in many different ways. And I would say it felt very hard to do so because from my experiences, I always felt like if I don't do this, then it's going to cause issues. And then all the fears come up, the fears of all sorts of stuff, shit hitting the fan, sorry for my language, and maybe employees not being happy or customers being disgruntled or financially being in a financial situation where I'm in a cash crunch or not able to pay bills. So all these fears are what led me, I feel, to keep doing in a lot of ways, or just wanting to see change on the exterior and feeling that if I didn't do all the time, that those change weren't going to manifest. So I have learned along the years to have more faith and trust that other people around me can achieve and do things that I was doing, for one, as good, if not better, if I gave them the right support, and to be able to trust people to do different things. And I've learned to work through a lot of those fears that I was talking about, to let go of those fears and really figure out where they came from. Because a lot of times those fears, what I found out, came from past experiences, sometimes childhood experiences that I've went through, traumatic experiences that actually I went through. So a lot of those behaviors and subconscious fears actually didn't even have anything to do with the current situations in work. So not saying that there weren't legitimate fears sometimes in some extent, but they really came from a different place, deeper within myself. So as I started doing that work, I've really come to let go a lot of those fears and embrace the trust and feelings of fate that things can go well and are going well. I've embraced just being even grateful sometimes for the things that I already had, which I didn't see, and things like that, to be in a better space on an emotional level, mental level, that I know I was at that point in time. So I know that was a long elaboration on that question, but that hopefully answers your question of how did that feel when I first started to do this type of work to not do as much, which I believe is the question.
I like that. And, you know, I mean, podcasts are all about the long elaboration. So no need to apologize for any of that. We're here to dive in deep and to go into these things, because I know that, you know, you and I are not alone in the fact that we live in a culture that tells us we're not enough, you know? And so whether that came at something where it was a childhood moment whether it was a traumatic event at some point in our lives or a whole series of those, from parents, from cultures, from teachers, from friends, from whatever, that reinforced that we are not enough. I think so many people listening would be able to recognize that, wow, the patterning that they have, or that we have, or that I have, that I do to cover up my feeling of not being enough, and to seek externalized opportunities to prove that I am enough. And, you know, like I wrote down in my journal the other day, I said, I don't have to be anything to anyone to be enough. And I'm really working hard on dropping that out of my head and into my heart, and making that a realization. And, you know, as you said, that's an ongoing process, because there's so much trauma and deconditioning, and in part of moving through that ability to lessen the expectations on oneself and to soften into not needing to do so much, it requires us revisiting a lot of old wounds. That little child in us that didn't feel like they were enough, and to be able to hold them and to see them. Man, that's a lifetime journey.
Absolutely. Yep. If I don't embrace my inner child and work through those feelings of not being enough, I don't learn that I don't need to do or be everything to everyone.
Mm.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so as you know, you kind of touched on this in terms of revisiting certain traumas, but were there any tools and any high impact practices perhaps that have helped you start to lessen the expectations on yourself, start to be able to soften into not needing to do so much?
Oh yeah, I definitely accumulated a bunch of tools along the years, and to simplify the description or the what those tools are, I would say it's energy psychology. So any tools within that realm have deeply helped me in doing the work that I've done on a personal level. And it first started with a wonderful friend, which I still speak with, who was a business coach, who had a theta healing practice. And I started learning about theta healing and what it was. And it helped me enormously in, as I said earlier, letting go of a lot of those fears, changing some of my beliefs, limiting beliefs that I held at a subconscious level. So not only consciously, but subconsciously, and learning how to access my subconscious, how to speak with my subconscious, how to find the answers within myself for all those feelings, that self-work that you talk about. Am I enough or not feeling enough? Finding those answers within myself, why I felt that way, and then reprogramming myself, changing those beliefs. Because at the end of the day, it is a belief. If I believe I'm not enough, where does that belief come from? What experience may I have experienced that created that belief? And really doing that type of work. So theta healing has been a phenomenal tool. I'm now actually certified in 5 different levels as a practitioner, and I help others with it. And then along the road through my healing journey, or my journey of letting go, whichever we want to call it, I feel they're kind of two of the same, I've found a few other tools, one of them being Reiki, and emotional fitness. So emotional fitness is another modality which offers tool for better emotional fitness, better tools to listen deeper within oneself, better tools to listen, period, at a deeper level, and tools to find our inner wisdom. So tools to find my inner wisdom in a non-advice-giving way. So if I'm helping someone else to be able to listen and help them find their own tools for that inner wisdom, to heal, to let go, to grow, to reprogram themselves in a non-advice giving way. Because if I'm giving you advice, it might not be exactly what you need for your own experience and situation. I might be able to relate with you, but is it really, is my advice the same advice you need, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day. So intuitively, there are different ways where I know I can channel what's going on with you a little bit. But when it comes out as advice giving, that's a tricky thing to play with, I would say.
Agreed, man. It's we're always projecting our own ideas of the world and our own idea of rightness and wrongness out, you know, and all we're ever able to do is do that from our own delusional perspectives. And so, you know, to think I can just shoot all over somebody else, even if it's of the most genuine intention, and maybe if it could be helpful, but, you know, and even if it is helpful, unsolicited advice that doesn't come from that inner wisdom isn't going to lead to that longest lasting, most empowered change. I agree with you so deeply on that.
And I know it's something that took me quite a while to learn. So I'm really happy I've learned that now along the years. But how many of us have seen ourselves have an advice monster at some point in time? One that fixes everything, right?
Yeah, man. And I think that, you know, I think that comes from a few different ways. Like there's that genuine intention to want to help, which, you know, is part of the advice monster. But I think part of that deeper advice monster is like perhaps our inability to sit individually and collectively with suffering and with trauma. Like we see wounds that come up and it triggers something inside of us. And so in order to hold space for somebody in a full sense, like it requires deep empathy and compassion because they need to be seen and they need to be heard. And so we need to do that in a way where we don't co-regulate, but we can, you know, interbe with one another, where we can allow them the space to feel what they need to, recognize that part in us that is hurt as well without feeding into that. Man, like that's such a deep struggle for me on my listening journey to not want to give advice or to not want to try and fix somebody's pain, but to acknowledge that there's beauty in that pain, that suffering and that trauma and everything that they need to move through will lead to some massive breakthroughs and to them being a better human being. And the best thing that I could do is to hold space for that, for them to know as they move through that intense vulnerability that they are enough and that they are loved.
Yeah.
And reconnect them to that space so that they can return to be in touch with their inner daemon, that inner whisper that already knows everything.
Absolutely.
It already has all the answers.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. If I'm to be comfortable to sit with my trauma or demons, yeah, I couldn't agree more. I absolutely need that compassion, that safety, that safe setting. If I don't have that, it's going to hurt. And I'm not going to want to open up. So yeah, I can say that I can relate with that with some of my own experiences. So I couldn't agree more with that statement. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, man. And I think that's part of what has led me to change that in myself. Like I've been around a few like really wonderful mystical healers, and you know, a lot of them probably wouldn't even call themselves healers, but the way that they were able to just hold space without needing to fix me or correct me, and how deeply hurt I felt in those moments with, it's like, they didn't need to give me any advice. They just like needed to remind me just by being and seeing me in my totality that I am enough was like the shift that I needed. And it was, it's those experiences, I think, for me that have doubled down on my intention and desire to not allow that advice monster to take over, even when I can feel it, like it's appetite boiling up inside of me and I'm sitting with somebody else's pain, you know, it's like, just validate, just hold space, just listen.
Yeah. And that's probably the most important thing if we actually want to help others. So Absolutely.
Totally, man. I'd like to bring it back to when we were last talking. You had mentioned that you actually kind of hit a burnout in 2020, which, you know, your healing journey, so to speak, went a lot deeper in 2018. And I think it's important to highlight that, you know, as we dive into our healing journeys, we're always going to, there's going to be moments where we fall back. There's going to be moments where we take a step backwards, or as we dive in deeper, there's going to be a new level. And it might feel like a step backwards, but it might lead to a deeper crack because we're more aware, right? And so as we go into our healing journey, there's going to be layers and levels of intensity and levels of unpacking. And so, you know, in 2018, you dive into your healing journey. Through that business coaching, you decide to start to change things, and things are shifting in your business. People's attitudes at work are changing. The culture of work is changing. Your reactivity is shifting. But in 2020, still, you hit a deep burnout. Could you share more about that?
Yeah, I love your questions. Those are great questions and great, a lot of great points you made there. And there's definitely, I would say, yes, through healing, there's always a point where, yeah, we kind of go back on that roller coaster or through those peaks and valleys. Like, it goes really good, and then all of a sudden, okay, something else comes up. And I know I can gladly and gratefully say that I'm finally at a spot in my life where I found a balance with that, where I can say that my roller coaster is pretty level, where I'm able to kind of just coast, go with the waves, go with the flow, go with the wind a lot better. I'm not trying to go faster than the wind anymore. That was one issue. I've always wanted to kind of get to those results faster than I needed to. I'm a very result-oriented person, so I was always rushed to get to things. So that on its own kind of created my own peaks and valleys. And yes, I was on an entrepreneurial burnout in early 2020, going into COVID, and even pre-COVID, like I had a huge cash crunch. So financially things were tight. I just had expanded the company, tripled the size of the company within about a year, without doing a proper strategic and business plan, and kind of just went all out. And that was a huge lesson for me as a business owner, is one I can share with others so they don't experience the same war stories that I can share. And yeah, so 2020 was rough. As I was experiencing those challenges as a business owner, I was also healing from 10 years of trauma. So my background that I started healing from in 2018 is a little interesting. What I call it today is a form of enlightenment on a spiritual level that I went through when I was 18 years old, which brought me to break down psychologically. So I was on a huge psychological breakdown and ended up attempting suicide when I was 18. So that led me for the next 10 years to, as you said at the beginning of this call, to work 80 to 100 hours a week to create the business, the success that I have today, being a workaholic for the next 10 years. So 2018, I started diving into that and started healing from a lot of the triggers, the emotional triggers I still had that I was experiencing on a daily basis. I had basically daily triggers, sometimes 2-3 triggers a day from that trauma. So you can call it PTSD or survivor's guilt, and those invisible wounds, those memories within my subconscious still held a lot of unresolved emotions that I had pushed down. So I had 10 years worth of memories, emotions, plus that experience in 2018, plus my childhood stuff that I have never looked at, childhood experiences, from bullying to childhood sexual trauma and a few other things that I had never looked at. And I started doing that work. So when I started doing that work and I started seeing progress and that I started seeing myself feeling better, a year down the road, 2018, I saw immense changes in my behavior, how I was able to deal with my emotions, my energy, that roller coaster was slowing down. So at that point, I wanted to basically tackle hell with a squirt gun. And that's kind of what I did. I was doing weekly, sometimes biweekly sessions for personal and professional growth, a little bit of both. And a lot of days I was on the table crying. A lot of the tears came out through that. So now I laugh at it, but it wasn't easy. It was definitely a lot of vulnerability that I had to express at that point in time to go through those things. And what happened in 2020, the best way I can explain it is that I was doing so much work on myself for inner work, and at the same time expanding a company, trying to find pleasure, find peace externally, find happiness externally, and that drove me to my burnout in 2020. So I wasn't leaving enough space for myself to actually integrate my healings, which is probably one of the things I can't emphasize more on for anybody going through trauma, that one needs to make sure he takes his time to actually integrate each healing. And if I don't do that, sometimes it can drive someone to a burnout or another chaotic situation. So depending what that looks like. So that integration time is very important. And something that I know I've learned for myself, that now if I do any sorts of healing, I need to make sure that, okay, I give myself the space to reflect, contemplate, stay grounded for a while, and not necessarily dig or explore within myself, within my subconscious, within experiences, within my trauma too much all the time, which was what I was doing for quite a while. So that's kind of the gist of my burnout in 2020, which led me to, from there, really evaluate where I was, not only on a personal level. On a personal level, I was doing a lot of great work. And some of that experience in 2020 and a few other things actually brought me to the point where I am today, where I can say I have very minimal emotional triggers, where I could almost even say zero. I still have some triggers sometimes, obviously around certain situations, but to say I probably went from 3-4 triggers a day around my trauma to maybe 3-4 a month, if that. Mm-hmm. So that whole process really helped me let go and heal enormously, where I can say today I'm doing very well. And I'm in the best place I've ever been in my life. So that experience in 2020 helped me in some ways. That burnout helped me to, okay, sit back, take a break, reevaluate personally what I want to do. And that's really when I started thinking, okay, I'm spiritually, on a spiritual level, my soul wants a different path. I don't want to do this 7 days a week, 80 hours a week gig anymore. What am I doing? I'm not spending time with my family. I'm not spending time with my wife. I'm not spending time with my friends. I'm basically working all the time. Even though I'm spending time with family, friends, and loved ones, I'm there physically, but I'm not there mentally anymore. I'm just tired all the time and not actually participating or being there in mentally, I guess. So it really helped me start seeing that. So it gave me light. It started shining light on a lot of those things. And I started to realize that, okay, I can't wear all the hats within my organization anymore. I can't do the estimating, scheduling, managing employees, still being a technician on jobs once in a while, going to do jobs, and working on growing the company all at the same time. I can't do this anymore. There's a great book on it actually called The E-Myth. And there's a few other good books I read along the years. But I can't be the technician, the manager, and the entrepreneur all at the same time. So that's a big lesson that I started learning on my burnout, started creating a management team, and I started delegating a lot more than I was at that point in time. So it's not that I didn't know how to delegate. I knew how to delegate very well, but I wasn't allowing myself to delegate those higher priorities or to hire someone else or to make those bigger moves. So that burnout forced me to do it indirectly or directly in a way. And it's probably the best thing I did for myself. So now I'm able to say, okay, I have a management team. We have a lot of our team members that are doing things that I was doing before. And I've been able to step away significantly and work on more of the visionary and the growth side of the organization while stepping into a new path for myself, doing business and personal coaching, as well as intuitive healing with my theta healing practice. So that path I'm still working on a little bit, but I have a couple clients that I'm working with business coaching, a couple personal clients with personal stuff, and these tools, another thing I will mention, have also helped me enormously as I'm the main one in the HR role within my organization. So I do personal coaching, professional development plans for the employees that are open to it. And any employees that need support on a personal level have myself or actually one of my consultants that I work with to help them and support them with any personal issues or work.
Wow.
So that's something I've been able to implement within my company with my own journey of healing, which I know is of great value for a lot of employees. We have a few employees that take advantage of it. And being able to give that support to employees has been one of the things that I've seen, I would say, the most improvement in productivity for the employees with. So giving them that support that, okay, I know how to manage my own mental health, my emotions, doing projects, so I'm not always overwhelmed, right? So giving them tools to be able to help them with that has increased their productivity more than any training or personal productivity training that I could have given them. Not saying that personal productivity training is not good, but from my experience, my personal mental health, emotional health, and even spiritual health, which from my perspective, I feel is one of the most important ones, has been the thing that helped me become the most productive within my work. So being able to give those tools to employees has helped the organization, has helped them become better people. They're better versions of themselves. Yeah, that's kind of my answer to that short question you asked. And hopefully that answered your question again of, that entrepreneurial burnout in 2020. What was that like? Mm. Well, that's kind of the gist of it and where I am today.
Those are some massive changes. And obviously that was a needed shift. And thanks for sharing, some of those more vulnerable aspects about what you've been going through. And obviously, again, you're not alone. And I sometimes can't help but wonder, Fabien, that like part of our obsession with productivity is perhaps a way to just keep the hamster wheel going. It's like we're existing in a very sick society that has not stopped for millennia with this development of wonderful technologies that we can have to serve, but you know, reflecting on the purpose, reflecting on the why. And I, what I really got out of a lot of what you've been doing in shifting that culture in your business is shifting away from productivity and switching to purpose and to personal health and to a place that, you know, if though if there is alignment in purpose and if we are healthy, well, then, you know, productivity becomes a byproduct, not something that we're, you know, aimlessly striving for. It's like, oh, well, we just want to be more efficient, more efficient, more efficient. It's like, well, do I even know what I want? Do I even know why I want it? And how can I be more effective, not efficient, but effective at doing these things? And maybe that doesn't take 80 to 100 hours on the hamster wheel. Maybe that takes learning to trust other human beings with tasks that I didn't allow myself to trust and create a culture where I can lean on others in a way that I haven't in the past. And it sounds to me, you know, like for myself, I have a hard time with some of the, I can delegate, but when it comes to deeper issues, especially something, you know, a baby that you've created in with your business, well, I mean, that becomes really deep, right? There's a lot of work and personal ties to that. And so to be able to lean into, to trust others on some of these deeper issues that you've been used to taking on yourself is a massive shift.
Yep, absolutely. And I still struggle with that once in a while as well. So there's still stuff that I'm working on, let's say.
Yeah, me too, man. That's a big one for me. For sure, that trust at deeper levels, especially when you're so used to being able to just do that yourself. But, you know, I think through experience is always a great way to learn more, because as you continue to do that, I'm sure you've, you know, lightened the stress on your load. Your business is probably thriving. You know, there's things that are actually start to reinforce the fact that, oh, if I do trust people, all of this starts to change. And I think we live in a culture where we're like, well, how are you going to change people's behavior? Well, you need to mandate it. You need to coerce certain people to do certain things. You know, if we have no drug laws, everybody's going to be high all the time. Oh, you know, if we have no speed limits, everybody's going to be doing whatever they want. If you have, oh, well, we can't charge for donation because nobody's going to pay anything. Right. And so like we live in a culture that underpins it. It's like what it screams is we have a lack of trust in each other, you know. But what I've seen is, like, you go to Portugal, they've decriminalized drugs and there's less drug abuse there than there is in anywhere in Europe, and they used to have some of the highest drug abuse rates. And so all of a sudden they switch from a model of punishment to a model of trust and support and health care, and then all of a sudden that changes. You go to the Autobahn in Germany and there's less accidents on that highway that has no speed limits. Right. Well, why is that? Because people are genuinely doing the best they can with what they have. And if we start there and provide them, as you're doing in your business, man, I think it's beautiful. Provide them with the tools and the skills that they need to be able to step into that higher version of themselves. Then all of a sudden they start to become that. You know, if we see somebody as being trustworthy, they become trustworthy.
Absolutely. Trust is a big one. But if I can't trust myself, can I trust others?
That's very interesting. Yeah, totally. Right. And you know, that's it, right? We see life as we are, not as it is. And so we're walking around with this projection of how we see the world to be, but really all it is an interpretation and a, you know, and perhaps even an unconscious evaluation of what our internal world is looking like.
Yep. If my internal world and what that looks like is not in check, I might be projecting that on everyone else. So if I don't have control of myself, or I don't trust myself, or I feel that everything's out of control, I'm going to want to control everything.
Totally.
I'm not going to trust anyone.
Yeah. Right. You know, and that's the world that we'll see, you know, that's a world that we'll create. Yeah. And it's not the world I want to live in. And through your actions, it's very clear that that's not the case for you either.
No, me either. That purpose you were talking about is definitely heading me in the right, or the same direction that you're in. So yeah, I fully agree. And I think we can have a lot of longer conversations on, society. How has society been doing things in a lot of places in the world, and how does that need to shift to have a more healthy, joyful, positive well-being for the mass majority of people living in that society and communities? But there's a lot of work to be done, I think, around that for a lot of places. And I guess one step at a time is the way to do it. And if people, can implement, obviously, things as I've been working on implementing, that I know other people, other business owners are implementing, some of them I know, if business cultures can start shifting in this light, then we can definitely have a lot of impact. So I believe as an entrepreneur and as any business owner, it's our responsibility to start making these shifts. I know I have a very interesting relationship with my dad. He's very old school. I'm very new school in this way of thinking that we're talking about. And my dad's a very kind man, very smart businessman in a lot of ways. But he's realizing more along the years that, Fabien has a point. Yeah, I might need to start changing these ways of doing things so we can do things better or easier. And new generations of employees aren't accepting this anymore. Okay, so what do I need to do in my old school ways to start changing the way I do things so that things go well within the organization? So those generational changes are very tricky to maneuver and work with. So I know me and my dad don't argue as much anymore. Very rarely, I can say we have a really good relationship, but I've seen many times where we were in disagreements, where we had to come to term with each other's opinions or whatnot, and one of us had to learn to sit back and be patient. So there's always one that has to learn to do that once in a while. And I know we've kind of took our turn depending on what it is. So those generational behaviors, beliefs, and patterns that we're implementing in our businesses, in our societies, are very important. And as an entrepreneur, I'm responsible to make progressive changes in the way we're talking about. So I can't, at the end of the day, rely on our politicians and leaders to do those changes for us. I don't believe we can. And that's a whole nother topic. We're not going to discuss politics here today, I think. Or leadership, because I feel like, I know there's a lot of good leaders. There are some good politicians, but I think leadership in that area definitely needs a lot of work from my perspective on many different levels. So leadership, as a leader, what am I doing to co-create this new reality? Right? So if every entrepreneur can start thinking that way, as an entrepreneur, what am I doing to start co-creating a new reality where employees can have better mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical health? And if I'm only in it for the money or the productivity or the efficiency, and I'm trying to control everything or put procedures and things in place or manipulate people and doing things, we're never going to have that reality. So it's crucial for entrepreneurs to start thinking this way, I believe, to start having these shifts in society that you and I are talking about here today. I believe I am taking the right steps. I still have a lot to learn. There's still always some work to be done. And my organization is far from being perfect, but I believe I'm heading in the right direction. So there's a lot to think about when it comes at being an entrepreneur. So living with purpose as an entrepreneur is more important than living for productivity, we could say, or just making money.
Yeah, that's definitely part of the shift that we need to move into, to find and recreate meaning in what it is that we do, and to sit and wonder why we do things. And, you know, are we being of contribution? Are we being of service through whatever it is? You know, of course we need money. We need to put food on our plate. We need to provide. We want to enjoy life. And, you know, we've created a culture where money is a part of doing that. But if that becomes the means and the end, well, then we've gone way, way off the rails.
Yep.
Because then we've commodified everything. Relationships become transactional, and our time just has a dollar sign attached to it. And that's not the more beautiful world that I want to live in.
Nope. Neither do I. I couldn't agree more with that. And that's a tricky one to maneuver through sometimes. And that's exactly how I felt lately. Like you said, that most relationships become transactional. And it's like, where do you put that line? Where, like, even as a personal coach, sometimes I know I do work, or I see people that are more vulnerable or not able to afford certain things, or even friends sometimes and family that need support. And on a business sense, I don't see anything wrong in charging for services for personal coaching, for example. But on the other side of me says, well, I can afford it. Like, I'm well off, and I do some volunteer once in a while, or help someone without it being transactional. And that feels good. And I don't believe that all transactions need to be transactional. But there's a balance there. So it's sometimes hard to find that balance and not get caught in the, I'm doing everything for everyone for free because I feel I can't charge for my services because it's a friend, and only doing it maybe occasionally, or giving them a little bit of a support for a few sessions or a couple hours, and then seeing where it goes from there. So it's, all relationships being transactional is something that I also see us being able to improve so that it's not that way in some sense. So I found that comment interesting. It's mm-hmm. something that I've been thinking a lot lately, and how to find that balance. Mm-hmm. I'm charging, I know, high enough fee for business coaching and consulting, as I am for personal coaching as well, I could say. But not everybody's able to afford that. And we're in a place right now, especially post-COVID, where a lot of people can't afford to live anymore. We have a lot of homeless on the road. That number is just going to keep increasing if things don't change for the better. If we don't see support for those people with the inflation that we see. So not everybody's able to afford support personally, especially. I know I had conversations with people lately, and I had a few people break down lately, and it's like, what do? I can't afford groceries anymore. Or what do? I have two kids. The dad's not there. Or what do? I'm disabled and have this condition, and I barely make it as is, and now everything's more expensive. I can't afford my house or home. So yeah, or I lost my job. What do? So there's a lot of, I think, things to address in that light, in that sense. And if we keep all of our relationships transactional and everybody just wants to get money out of it, then where are we going? Without support from a federal level, where are we going if that support's not there? Because then we can go on a whole other conversation around how I know statistics show that Our federal budgets, for example, only give 0.5% towards mental health. 0.5%, if you calculate it, is what is put towards mental health from federal budgets right now. And I would say 0% is put towards emotional health and 0% is put towards spiritual health. So how can we help those less fortunate not lose their livelihood, their lives, their house, and be on the street without food and stuff, and give them the support they need when budgets aren't even there from our leaders to do so? Which I know there has been tiny improvements, tiny, and some support giving through COVID, but still lots of work to be done. I know I was speaking with medical professionals and professionals in the mental health industry lately on multiple calls, and it's a recurring subject. We have zero for mental health systems in place. And that's not even talking about emotional health or spiritual health. So at the end of the day, there's a circle of health that the indigenous actually believe in, the medicine wheel, and we have four aspects of health: my mental health, my emotional health, my spiritual health, my physical health. If those four aren't in check, or if I only have two of those that I'm good with, my mental and physical, let's say, and I'm sitting on a chair with only two legs, what's going to happen? I'm going to tip over at some point. So if our society only has not even one of those checks, is our society going to just tip over? I would believe so.
I think we've been tipped over for a while.
Have we? Have we been tipped over for a while? Maybe, yeah, maybe we have.
It certainly seems that way. You know, and you keep referencing leaders, and I a politician to me isn't a leader. A leader is somebody who helps bring out the best in people and processes. And, you know, if I'm sitting around waiting for those statistics you shared are sad. They're really sad. And it you know, when your military budget is exceedingly large and your healthcare budgets in those ways are, it's particularly preventative healthcare, are so dismal, it speaks a lot. And so for me, at some point it says, well, okay, being a man of action and, you know, responding to what's in the situation in front, I could sit here and be angry. I could sit here and, you know, tear down and wait for a new policy or bill to be passed that will put 2% into the mental health budget and 2% into the, or I can continue to dive into those questions about what does, you know, how do I move my relationships from being transactional to being authentic, to be rooted in what is real and what is true. And maybe there isn't a dogmatic answer to that. And maybe I need to evaluate that with what's alive in me. And maybe somebody does need free help and somebody can pay for it. And maybe there's times where I need to just stop what I'm doing and go help my neighbor because they need food, right? And how do we shift away from a culture of scarcity? Because, you know, we can blame our federal and our provincial municipal governments, but they've inherited a story just like we have, that we live on a planet that is scarce, that is finite for resources, and that more for you means less for me. And that story, yeah, that underpins the policies, that underpins our livelihood, that underpins the way that we do business, all of that is this really deep piece at the root that we need to kiss the root all the way up and start to heal these things. And remember that we live on a planet that there is enough for you and there's enough for me. And we've got soil here that we can take care of and nourish and create abundant food. And we can show up for each other and provide support so that we can take care of those four aspects of health. And so that we can make sure that people aren't sleeping without a roof over their heads. It's not the world I want to live in. And it pains me to see people walk by people on the streets. as if they're a nuisance and that we're not all a part of this product in this world. And it's reflecting these deep issues that we're needing to sit with in our own internal world. And so for me, you know, my work leans into a lot of the work that you're doing. How do I go inside and heal what I can't stand to see in this outer world? Because it's not enough for me to wait for a policy to come in and shift something like that so that I can be more happy, or wait for some external circumstance to change. Because, you know, it's my duty as I'm occupying human form to leave this place more beautiful than I found it.
Absolutely. That's why we're going to create did I hear something about a men's retreat, that we're going to co-create something?
That's right. You know, and so it's surrounding ourselves with the people who are ready to lead that change. And from you and I sitting down in a conversation at a cafe to helping to round up dozens of men who are ready and open to change. Right. And so here we are, you know, us sitting and empathizing with one another about how beautiful it is to have these conversations, to hold this kind of space. And how do we transition that and really harness that momentum so that we can affect change and work on our own healing as individuals and collectively. So yeah, man, we are making those moves and diving in deep.
Looking forward to it.
Me too. Me too, brother. Is there anything else you'd like to share with the listeners as we, you know, start to wrap things up?
I could share that I feel blessed and grateful that you've invited me here today to speak on some of these subjects, which are very close to my heart. And again, thanks a lot for the invitation, reaching out. And I'm looking forward to connect again sometime soon, which I know we are. And besides that, I pray that hopefully we can all go in this direction we're talking about. And I know you and I are, and hopefully other people can embrace this slowly to for us to keep moving forward with creating support for people.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. Big time. And one last question for you. What is your big vision to see humanity move forward?
My big vision to see humanity move forward. That's a big question, actually. It's something I know I think about occasionally, significantly, actually. I really work on staying present and not think too much of that nowadays, but having a society that's able to live in a more positive light and be able to live with joy and ease while still being able to express all levels of emotions in a healthy way is kind of what I see. That doesn't mean that expressing anger is bad or hurt. There's a positive and healthy way to express those emotions, but I feel a lot of people haven't been able to learn that yet. So having an emotionally fit world, having a spiritually and mentally fit world where we can co-create and thrive compared to what I see a lot of people living like or living with, some of those heavy emotions or frustrations that are sometimes hard to live with, even to the point that some people commit suicide. I know I've heard just in the last week, two people that have been having thoughts of suicide. And a lot of people have committed suicide within the last month, if you really look at the statistics and numbers. So how do we change that reality so those people that are affected in a negative way with frustrations, health issues, trauma, are able to move forward, heal, and live in a better world that's supportive in all of the aspects we shared today.
Mm. Yes, brother. Yes.
So that's kind of the big vision, big picture, I would say.
I love it. I'm on the train with you, man. And I know that personally and professionally, you're an inspiration in doing that work, and you're helping to lead the way. So thank you again for taking the time and for everything that you're doing to help keep that train rolling forward.
Good stuff. Thanks a lot, Stu. The train's going to keep moving forward.
I hope you enjoyed this episode with Fabien Doirin.